movement doesn't happen in patterns. The squatting pattern does not really exist. It's taught to many of us as this sort of algorithmic way to understand how a squatting movement happens. So there's progressions and regressions and corrective exercise and all that. We're going to talk about what squatting really is and what movement really is all about. We're going to talk about how to use squatting to help diagnose movement and different types of squats as tools to help you with whatever progression or progress you're looking to see. All of that and more all on this week's episode of...
Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
So Bill wrote an article on the UHP Network this week about strategic resistance and the squat. It's in the UHP Plus area. You can access with a free 3-day trial if you would like. There's a lot of great stuff going on in there. We just finished and started the Anatomy 101 course, which is free. So if you want to get in there, it's a nice little roadmap anatomy course that talks about the traditional perspective on anatomy and gives some of the perspective through the UHPC lens. So you can check that out for free. There's a free assessment course coming soon, so you want to get on the UHP Network to get that. But yeah, this strategic resistance in the squat article... I think people understanding that there isn't this sort of straight progression of how to squat. There isn't one way to squat. There isn't when you talk about proper form of a squat, it's really more idiosyncratic and based on the person's structure and where they currently are at within their center of gravity and base of support. Maybe talk first about what inspired you to write this article and kind of the theme of the article, and then we can go off of that.
Well, basically... When we start adding a strategic resistance, so all the strategic resistance is an added constraint to promote a specific behavior. And so to give you a for instance, so if I hold a load in front of me, that load will displace the center of gravity in the direction of the load because I'm adding systemic load. So the distribution of mass is different. And so then that promotes a behavior for me to manage the center of gravity. So if the weight would pull me forward, my response would be to create an expansion posteriorly, which changes my physical shape and allows me to manage the center of gravity inside of my base of support. But it also gives me access to different shapes in doing so, which is one of the reasons why, and probably all six of the people that listen to this have done like a ramp elevated goblet squat, and they notice right away that, oh, I can achieve a greater depth in this representation than I could if I had even done the same thing flat footed or if I had a bar on my back or whatever. And so what we're talking about here is what it would take to access a shape, which is essentially what we're talking about. If we make reference to like the deepest possible squat, the only rule is I have to be able to acquire the right shape to do so. All deep squats may not be achieved in the exact same manner, but they would follow a similar rule of, okay, I need enough external rotation space to achieve the desired shape. And then I have to superimpose enough internal rotation to slow my descent, because the bottom of the squat, that's essentially what it is. You're projecting forward, but you're actually slowing the system down in that circumstance. And all you have to do to get a sense of this is, like, just let's just say that you could achieve this amazing deep squat. Your lower extremities are actually positioned in front of the axial skeleton. So that becomes this anterior constraint to the forward progression of the body as you would descend the center of gravity into the squat. And so really what we're talking about is an acquisition of a shape. But that's also why you'll see any number of additional strategies that people will use to achieve some measure of depth or the inability to access a certain depth. You'll see, like, if I reach forward and I can deep squat and you take the reach away from a lot of people, they'll essentially fall backwards because you've actually taken away the mass displacement, just like we talked about if we were holding it in a goblet position. So ultimately what we're looking at here is the ability to descend the center of gravity and acquire a very specific shape change to allow that dissension to occur.
Right. Through the squatting movement and the movement of squatting. So the thing I want to kind of circle back to, since we, the title of the episode and what we talked about right in the beginning, like if a squat is not a pattern, if we don't move in patterns, if there isn't certain movement patterns that are set for each type of movement, like stepping up and down stairs or descending and ascending in a squat or doing a push-up or holding a plank or whatever pattern, movement patterns you're valuing, what is wrong about that perspective, or what's misinformed about that perspective? And then what do we need people to view squatting as in the context of what we're going to talk about for the rest of the episode?
Well, like overall, and again, let's use the deep squat as a frame of reference. To achieve that position, the system has to be able to move forward slowly. So I have, and ultimately at the bottom, like wherever you stop, you have essentially arrested the forward movement of the center of gravity. But it is the lowest position of the center of gravity with your feet on the ground, basically. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the ability to descend the center of gravity in a forward direction with the capacity to manage that center of gravity without going forward. You know, so give you another example. Somebody descends into a deep squat and they have to lift their heels to do so. So now they're resting on forefoot. That is the system trying to continue to go forward. So essentially what you don't have under that circumstance is the capacity to create the posterior expansion, which actually slows the center of gravity. And so then you're using a compensatory strategy, which is the active heel elevation in that circumstance to create a compensatory strategy, essentially is what it is compensatory expansion to allow that system to slow down and then come to rest on the forefoot versus say the entire foot in that circumstance.
Right. And so is calling something a pattern is a little too structural reductionist. I believe it's a little too reductionist just in general. Yeah. It's thinking that there is some type of puzzle piece that fits into another puzzle piece. And there's gears and levers and pulleys that make all these static positions happen sequentially. Right. It's not really how movement works. Movement's more of this sort of behavioral emergent representation of how we manage center of gravity and pressure through time, through space and time. So it's really four dimensions.
I would look at it as rather than looking at it as an absolute, it's like everybody should be able to, right?
Yes.
Instead of that, it's like, how do you?
Right. And more importantly, what are the reasons why maybe you cannot? Mm-hmm. And maybe you never will be able to. It's like there are some people. Bill has fake hips. Bill made a lot of bad decisions when he was younger. And he decided that he needed to be able to do a certain type of squatting or a certain type of lifting to be as big and brawny as possible.
And it worked.
Muscle bound Bill.
It worked with consequences. Yes.
Yeah. If you look hard enough on the UHP network, you could probably find some pictures of Bill's bodybuilding bod. How's that for alliteration? Anyways, so what I'm trying to get at is Bill could never, even though Bill is a wide structural archetype, so getting to the depth of a deep squat is probably never really in the cards for him structurally.
Well, not without a sufficient load to force the position.
And on top of that, you now have fake hip joints. Yes, so I would expect even more of a constraint to getting into that position.
Yes.
But that wouldn't... Yes. Now, going to someone that values and says, like, this squatting pattern is something everyone needs to be able to do, and I need everyone to be able to go ass to grass or whatever you want to call it, full depth of the squat. You're either going to have to build up the floor under their heels or have them hold a weight or just jam them into the position and ask for some sort of compensation to happen. What we can try to impart over this podcast or maybe a series of podcasts talking about squatting is like understanding the difference between like what someone is able to do within their own structure and configuration versus what you try to impose on everybody as this general rule of thumb or a requirement for human beings to be able to squat all the way to depth.
Yeah. Well, you know, just if you look across the spectrum at, say, Olympic weightlifters, and then you look at, say, the bottom of a snatch, or you look at the bottom of a clean and jerk, you will see any number of strategies to acquire the deepest possible position. So you're going to see different stance widths. You're going to see different torsions through bony structure. You're going to see different spinal positions and such. And there will be some people that are predisposed to having these beautiful representations that we would consider like an ideal representation of a snatch or a clean and jerk. And then, like I said, it's not that they can't execute a movement, but they're going to have to do it in a different way because of their physical structure. And like I said, it's not a matter of they should be able to. It's like, how do they perform that? Because you think about it, it's like to get under a bar in an Olympic lift, you need the descent of the center of gravity, because the bar really doesn't go that far. You know, when you perform the second pull, it's like you got to get under the bar. It's like, well, how do you acquire that position of the center of gravity?
Yeah.
And then, but that allows us to ask better questions, and then we can resolve the reasoning behind, oh, this is why they're using this strategy versus what Joe Bob over here does, essentially the same activity in its name, but they're actually acquiring the position in a much different way.
Right. So one of the main precursors to squatting well within your individual constraints would be being able to have a center of gravity that's within the base of support, and you can manage within, you can keep it within your base of support as you move.
Well, that would be ideal. But so when we see things, so here's some of the, like a traditional perspective, you say, this guy has a right shift when he squats. This guy has that left shift when he squats, or this guy has a torsion. It's like, so what they're actually showing you is the representation of how the system is behaving to provide a solution to the problem. The problem being is like, okay, so I have to descend my center of gravity. How am I going to do this? And so that could be any number of turns and twists to get there, because once again, I have to create a space. So this would be creating an ER. And if I don't have access to relative motion ER, I'm going to have to create a substitution for that. So I'll have to use a compensatory strategy to create more space to descend. Well, if that space is more on one side than the other, that's where we're going to start to see some of these grossly asymmetrical representations of a squat. They're just following the direction of the space that they have access to allow the center of gravity to descend. I might be able to do that more on one side than the other, right? And so the people that appear to have these beautiful, symmetrical, deep squats are better at resolving these rotational solutions. So let's just say that I could descend on the right and I can't descend on the left. It's like, well, that's going to promote this movement towards that space. If I have the capacity to resolve the compressive strategy that would limit the depth, and I have the capacity to project the other side, I can provide a rotational solution that allows the squat to remain in an apparent symmetry as I descend.
Right. So yeah, the understanding, I guess we can talk about sort of understanding what's happening in the squat. And typically, if we're going to break propulsion into three phases, obviously mm-hmm. there is transition elements to this. Mm-hmm. We can talk about early, middle, and late. Mm-hmm. And in the case of a squat, I think what can be confusing to a lot of people is there's an assumption that the top of a squat would be like an early
right.
propulsion mm-hmm. type of place or position, right. but it is not.
No, a squat is a bottom up activity. Yeah. It just so happens that we're humans. We walk around standing up. Right. And so then the assumption is that the beginning of the squat is at the top, and the actual representation of early propulsion, which is the superimposition of internal rotation on external rotation and the center of gravity behind the ground contact. So we've sort of defined that a little bit already. And so what we want to do is we want to look at this as a bottom up activity where we would have early represented at the very bottom. We have to access the greater degree of downforce to actually stand back up. And then as we initiate the squat, so this is what's important. You're not standing in late propulsion. It's when you initiate the squat, that's where the late propulsive representation is actually represented, because you have to project forward to start the descent. I have to be moving from a late position into an early position to access the bottom of the squat. So it would go, bottom would be early, my projection upward would be middle, and then as I initiate the squat, that would be our late representation.
Right. And then walking, the thing that confuses people is trying to compare squatting to walking and thinking mm-hmm. that since it's upright, walking is upright, right, that early would be at the top. So hopefully that kind of helps people understand.
Well, we also can connect that really quick if you want.
I wanted to make just one point about how what you had mentioned, you know, developmentally, we roll around on the ground, we crawl around on the ground, and then we support ourselves in a low position and then stand up. So that's like, it's very coherent with how we develop. Yeah. So it's not, Bill isn't making anything up here. It's just like how the human being learns to move anyways. So that it's coherent to say that the bottom of the squat is early propulsion, then middle, and then late.
Yeah. Yeah. We could use another example. So if you did a standing broad jump, so two legs landing on two legs, mm-hmm. right? Like, and give it some effort so you get a representation of this. Well, you project the center of gravity up and forward from the initiation of the jump. And that is your late propulsive representation. As you land, you're going to land with your center of gravity behind your foot contact. And then as you land, you're going to control the descent forward. And so you're controlling the center of gravity in that circumstance. So we can look at the squat the same way as we would as a broad jump, but without the jumping portion of it. So it's initiated the same way as the standing broad jump. It's initiated in late propulsion, and I would descend into the early representation. And so this is the same premise as taking a step forward. So as I take a step forward and I land and I start to superimpose internal rotation on the external rotated position, I'm slowing the center of gravity down. I'm not stopping it. I'm just slowing it down. And the center of gravity actually descends because I'm starting to superimpose the internal rotation. So it holds in regards to its representation of the phases of propulsion.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these in-place exercises that people sort of understand them as just controlling forward motion.
Yes.
And your ability to sort of contain forward motion, I think, is a good way to think about it. And understanding also that having an appreciation for the fact that there is only forward motion. We have a system that's only designed to do that. This is a big one. This is a hard one for people to wrap their heads
around. It's tough. Yeah, so I know.
I think
it's
like tough. Examples that came to mind when I had a hard time reconciling this were like a reverse lunge or a deadlift, where you're thinking, oh, well, I'm moving in reverse or my hips are moving back. But just think about there's like a green dot that's in your center of gravity, right? And that's mm-hmm. where your center of gravity is. Where mm-hmm. does the green dot always move as you change levels with any activity?
Yeah.
It always moves forward.
It's very helpful.
So there is no arguing this. The only way the green dot ever moves backwards is if I push you as hard as I can, and you fly backwards and do like a backflip.
You have to create a very undesirable compensatory strategy.
Yeah, I could bend my spine.
You have to create a shape that would be very undesirable.
Yeah, and something would probably break in that case.
But this happens. So this happens when people try to assume a deep squat, right? I mean, you see these big rounding shape changes posteriorly. Well, what they're actually trying to do is create the slowdown, the delay strategy or the yield, and they're using physical structure to do so. It's like, this is why you wouldn't want to load somebody in those circumstances, because now you're magnifying magnifying the downforce on a structure that's already hit its end constraint. And so this is why you'll end up with like a ligamentous problem in the spine, or you're going to get a compressive strategy in a vertebra, or you're going to get a herniated disc or something like that in a worst case scenario.
Bill is trying his hardest not to use the terminology of like a butt wink, but that's what he's referring to. Anyone that is thinking about squatting and assessing squatting and watching squatting compensations, they understand and they know what a butt wink is when I say it. All that is, the pelvis rolling underneath, is just like an ER compensatory strategy at the lumbar spine.
it's an expansion. It's an expansion of the posterior structure, which gives you the space.
But it can also lead to potential injury, or
there are consequences to it. Absolutely.
Right. So the other things that came to mind are like, if you land, so someone that has a lot of, I don't want to say laxity because I don't necessarily know if it's a genetic thing or not, but say someone landed from a jump with their legs locked out and then they hyperextended both their knees backwards and they broke something. That would be a posterior expansion. That would be forward movement. That's no longer contained. And the center of gravity in that case would be moving backwards.
But that's no. The center of gravity would be contained. Okay. The expansion is definitely posterior.
Right. Okay. Well, so yeah.
But they're just containing the center of gravity. So they're making sure the center of gravity doesn't go forward. So there's a difference between it moving back and preventing it from going forward. They would not.
So other than falling, then the center of gravity can't really move backwards.
Well, it can, but you would fall. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. There would be some sort of collapse involved with a backwards move.
The idea is controlling the position of the center of gravity. Yeah.
Right. So all these movements, all these exercises, we are moving forwards always, mm-hmm. just like Bill's mm-hmm. shirt. And we are just controlling the rate at which we're doing that. And a lot of times the rate at which someone's forward motion happens is too quick. And it almost skips phases. That's where we will see like someone like skipping. I don't know. Is that a good way to explain it?
They just get really small. Let me give you an example. Let me give you an example. Okay. When you look at somebody doing like a powerlifting style squat, where the pelvis is well behind the ground contact. Okay. And then they can't descend any farther in that circumstance. What that is the early phase is so abbreviated that you immediately go towards a middle propulsive strategy where there's a greater representation of internal rotation shape change. So the pelvis is holding on to its IR shape. You do not have an expansion of the anterior outlet of the pelvis. And so you're constraining the squat into its middle representation in that circumstance. So they initiate the squat. So they do perform an element of projection, which starts to descend the center of gravity. But because they don't have the ER space available, they immediately go into, they move quickly from whatever early representation that they do have into the middle propulsive strategy. So what you're actually adding is you're pushing harder into the ground, which abbreviates your ability to descend because you're already pushing up against the attempt to descend the center of gravity.
Right. And an example on the other side of that would be someone that can't really resolve like a late propulsive strategy. So they're sort of stuck in this ER representation.
Yeah. Yeah. So they move their feet really far apart, right? That allows them to apply the delay so they can actually start to superimpose some measure of IR and then they can descend as far as they can in that circumstance. But that's why you see these like, especially the people that get higher and higher levels of compression. So as I add force production, what I might find is that my low load squatting behaviors, I start to lose the capacity to descend the center of gravity. Right. Or I start to find myself turning away from midline more and more into ER, or I elevate my heels so I can add more ER space that would be available. So I can actually descend.
Right. So I think we're going to have to do multiple episodes of this. So we'll get into types of squatting as tools and strategic resistance. And we'll get into narrows and wides and the differences for squatting for those type of people. I think we covered the pattern, like why squatting is not really a pattern, what it is, what it represents. Right. And then we talked a lot about the forward motion thing, which really applies to all exercises. We know it's just controlling that forward progression of movement.
What are you streaming?
Yeah. What are your sleeper picks for streaming TV shows or movies? Like what is something that you are revisiting or are watching for the first time that you never knew about and you think other people should as well? Post that in the comments below.